places, everyone. Quiet on the set. Curtains in five.
Hello and welcome to Footlights, a community theater podcast coming to you from the studios of WVIK Radio on the campus of Augustana College in Rock Island, Illinois. I'm Chris Hicks, and returning today as guest host is the amazing Jake Ladd, who has a theater resume as long as the Mississippi River. And I have to admit and embarrass him that he is my theater crush. Sorry.
Well, that's a credit. I'm moving up to the top of my resume then.
So welcome, Jake, and thanks for joining me today.
Thanks for having me, Chris.
You will find a lot to relate to with our guest, who I Googled last night, expecting to find some cool headshots and a little background. Instead, I was amazed. Welcome, Bobby Becker. I was going to say I didn't know anything about you other than your Circa 21 roles, but after Googling you, I've got all kinds of stuff. But let's start at the beginning. How did you get involved in theater? What's your background pre-professional?
Sure. Okay. I grew up in Huntsville, Alabama, in North Alabama, and I was fortunate enough to be enrolled in an arts magnet school from kindergarten through high school. And so immediately in my normal academic education, I was also introduced to arts as a means of entertainment and education. And so I did my very first stage. I made my very first stage appearance when I was 5 years old.
Aww.
In, I don't even remember what the show was called, but the entire school was involved in one way or the other. And I was a wombat, and we sang dig, dig, dig like a wombat. And so that was our contribution to whatever that show was. I don't know if it was a book musical or anything, but all the kindergartners were involved, just like all the eighth graders. And so I have been exposed to theater since then, and did it all the way through middle school. And then I went to performing arts high school that you had to audition to get into.
In Alabama?
In Alabama.
Wow, I didn't know Alabama was so big on theater.
Well, that's what I always tell people. You know, it's like, if I had to be from Alabama, I'm glad I was from Huntsville, because we did have a lot of opportunities to do things like that. And it reminds me a lot of the Quad City area, which is why I feel very at home here since moving here. But I did get to do theater and musical theater and many other, I was exposed to many other forms of art and performing art, especially all through my early education, and then went to school for musical theater, specifically at the University of Alabama in Tuscaloosa, and have been in the professional field since then.
Wow. All the way since college. You got in right away to pros.
Yeah. When my freshman year, I was very fortunate to get to go at Alabama, the university. They have a professional theater that they run specifically for Alabama students over the summers down in Gulf Shores, down the beach.
Wow.
And so Summer Tide, as it's called, so it's like Summer Stock and Roll Tide kind of smashed into one thing, was a professional opportunity for us that was run just from our university. And I did it my freshman year, and my very first professional gig was my freshman year of college, and I played Schroeder in You're a Good Man, Charlie Brown.
Aww.
And I loved that job so much that I did it every summer of my college career. And there are plenty of opportunities for college students to get to go and do theater professionally, but this one being just for us really, you know, was something that I found to be very a big advantage for me, and also for, you know, a great opportunity to continue to work with my professors who I really enjoyed, and my fellow students, and that community down there. We were also, part of our gig was to teach summer camps to students throughout the year. And I've always found a lot of value in that as well.
Wow. I'm out of breath just listening to your college career. Wow. Now, the workshops, you will find that I jump around a lot because my brain goes in multi-directions. When I Googled you, I saw that you have a children's theater, fun.
That's right.
Along with your lovely wife, Ashley, which we have to get into that because how you met.
Sure.
But no, I see I lost my train of thought again.
Well, let me jump in there.
Good.
Because I also want to know about that. And I also, you were gang Googled apparently. Yeah. Because, and this is, Chris, I wanted to mention, this is having sat in with you several times. This is the first time I've sat in with a guest who I don't know personally. And in this case, I'm a fan. So this is a treat for me. I also was seeing about What Fun and the Korean connection.
Right.
And so I was going to ask you about that if Chris didn't.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
Well, yeah, it's all tied in. Like you say, if you're jumping around, then I have always tried to tie in, you know, as much of my life and career as possible. And so I did meet my wife, Ashley, who grew up here in Bettendorf in the Quad Cities. She went to Bettendorf High School.
That was one of my next questions, how you got back to the Quad Cities.
That's right. Yes, that was a good, an easy way for us to get back. She grew up in Bettendorf, and she was in Korea working for what is now called English Musicals Korea. At the time when we worked there, which was 2011 through 2015, you know, together, it was called we were the edutainers, so the educational entertainers at Gyeonggi English Village in Paju, South Korea, which is just like 45 minutes north of Seoul, so that means it's right on the DMZ. Ooh. And so, you know, from the top of the hill, we could see across the river into North Korea from where we were. But that was a wing of the Gyeonggi English Village, which was an English immersion theme park where we would work. And it was a government funded and government run. And so we were really brought over as on teacher visas because we were teaching English through theater. And through our company, we would create three musicals or three, they weren't always musicals exactly, but we would create three shows for the guests to come to. One was anywhere between 6 and 10 person main stage musical that would be like 50 minutes long that the people would come. And that was mostly for entertainment. And then we would do one 30 minute, 2 to 3 person mini musical that was kind of like Dora the Explorer, where we would do in a small room with a PowerPoint presentation behind us that we would click through and be like, and which direction should we go if we want to find the grocery store? And then they, you know, interact with the audience. And then our smallest show was a 2-person game show, which was just about physical challenges and teaching things like that to the guests. And so that's where we met, was creating and performing all of those shows. And so they would hire all of us as a performer and as something else. And so Ashley was originally hired as a performer and choreographer, and I was originally hired as a performer and composer for our main shows. And then throughout our time there, I wrote scripts for 5 shows, and I wrote scores for 10 probably. And Ashley was choreographing all the time, and she eventually became the artistic director of our group. And that, you know, was an amazing opportunity for both of us, because for me, it was right out of college. And for her, she had been in New York for a while before she decided to take that gig. But it's very much like what a lot of people that graduate from musical theater programs go out looking for, a tour or looking for a cruise ship or something like that, to kind of make a lot of money and get to travel. And, you know, that was fun for me.
How did you even learn about this
right.
program?
One of my professors at Alabama had just worked a summer job with a girl up in New York who had just started working in Korea, and was asking her if she knew anybody from school, from, you know, her life or from the school, that would be interested in coming over to Korea because they were looking specifically for men and specifically for composers. And so this was something that I didn't have a whole lot of experience composing or anything like that. But Stacy, shout out Stacy Alley, my musical theater professor at the time, knew that I was musically inclined and knew that I was just leaving and was interested in traveling and things like that. And so it was just luck. And Ashley had people that from her college, she had 2 people that she had been to school with who were already over there. And so it was the same kind of thing. It's just, you know, just who you know, as I'm sure everybody knows how much of the biz that is I just got lucky. Just knowing that my specific teacher at that specific time when I graduated, I had only lived in New York for a month by the time I booked the Korea gig. And then it was, that's all it was about for the next few years for me.
I'm floored. I'm absolutely floored. Now, other than Korea, where have you worked overseas other places?
No, that was the only time. I was there. I graduated college in 2011. And like I say, I did a summer job and then moved to New York in August, booked the Korea job in September. And then it was all about getting the paperwork done. And I was in Korea in March of 2012 until July of 2015.
Wow.
And that's when we came back. And so when we were over there, we were doing all of this, you know, and it's mostly for, you know, it's English as a second language theater. And so it feels
and
very much
it
like
for children or for
essentially, yes, we would adults. we would have adults that would come in. It was mostly for children because they would come and they would get to go, you know, see how you work at the, you know, use your English skills at the library or and your English skills at the post office or English skills at the, you know, restaurant. And then they would come and watch our shows and get to be immersed in it that way. And we would have, you know, lines and or like specific kinds of phrases or words that we would want to, like, you know, help them learn what it means to, what's a mystery and what does it mean to go on an adventure. And like we would have specific words that we would push all these things. But it feels very much like American children's theater because you're, you know, simplifying things and trying to heighten the physical action or the, you know, we don't have very many like slow, sad ballads in our shows, you know, it's mostly about entertainment as opposed to deeper feelings and things like that. And so from getting to do that and seeing how successful we could be and feeling that the work that we were producing was quality, that is how What Fun was born, was that Ashley and I had met and had developed a relationship personally and professionally at that point. And we wanted to bring some of those shows that we had produced in Korea over to America. And so we asked because when you sign your contract in Korea, it says like you are everything you create here is owned by us at Gyeonggi English Village and English Musicals Korea. And so, you know, we knew that going into it. But when we knew we were leaving, we, you know, went to the heads of that department and said, we think that this is quality and we hope that, you know, you can obviously use it as much as you want to, but we know that like that's part of the draw for people was to go over there to get to create their own stuff. And so we're just thinking like, if this is just going to sit dusty on the shelves of Korea, like, can we produce this in America? Like that's, you can have the rights to it everywhere else, but can we have the rights to produce these shows in America? And they granted us the right to do that. And so we have been able then to create What Fun Theater and use those shows and continue to develop the themes on those shows and new shows to do shows in America. And our very first What Fun production was at the New York International Fringe Festival in 2015.
Oh, wow.
And we did Rapunzel in the Wild West, which is our most
popular. Oh, that's
popular.
On my list of things to talk about.
Yes, that one's been done the most. It's it has such a good gimmick with Rapunzel using her hair as a lasso. And that was one of the ones that I wrote the music for originally in Korea and has... And that was one that we produced in New York and have had produced several places, both through What Fun specifically and at other community theaters and professional theaters in America since then.
Now, I have to ask, because I'm sort of freshly off working with children in the theater,
mm-hmm.
which wasn't the best experience.
Okay.
Compare Korean kids to American kids working in the theater.
Well, I think anytime you go into a position like that where you are working with anyone who has less experience from you or is less trained than you are in something, you always are looking to adjust your level of expectation. And I think we had, I think fairly, a very low expectation for the kids in Korea because we didn't expect them to be very experienced in the theater. And we didn't expect them to be very experienced in the English language. And so that, I think we set our bar very low for them. And that when you do that, it's not necessarily a dig at the people you're working with, but it gives you the opportunity and gives them the opportunity to meet and go above your expectations. And so we, I think, have higher expectations sometimes for the kids that we're working with here in America, because we expect them to be able to communicate with us and to be able to listen and receive our notes and feedback and be able to, you know, voice theirs on a higher playing field, I guess. And so it depends, I guess, is the short answer for this long answer that I'm giving. But I have always found it to be very important to work with kids in theater. That's especially because that's how I was introduced to it so young and how much I've seen it can do for children. And, you know, especially, you know, given working with American kids and working with Korean kids, getting to see how we all can meet in the middle of, like, this is clearly a worthwhile art form and form of entertainment and form of expression and communication. And I think getting to work with the Korean kids has helped me in my and vice versa, the American kids to the Korean kids has helped me to be able to see where we can find the common ground in all of that and where the line is of we're having fun doing this and where the line is of we're learning something about ourselves and about each other and about the world and, you know, being able to take from the kids and give to the kids as adults is also, I think, just as important and something that I never want to stop doing.
Well, forgive me for asking, but have you and Ashley jumped into the world of parenthood?
No, that is that was something that we talked about early on.
You're so busy. I don't know how you could possibly raise a child right now.
And that's, you know, that is part of it. And I think that we are both, you know, relatively logical. And, you know, that is not something that either of us specifically wanted. And I think for that reason, we decided not to go that route. And we have, I think that we're both good with kids.
You have a lot more children
right?
this way.
And that's what people have told us many times is that we are good with kids. And, you know, that is, we hope that we are able to continue to be good with the kids. It's, you know, it's harder and harder to understand them these days, as I'm sure both of you know.
And you provide something that a lot of parents can't.
Yeah.
I
hope so anyway.
That's great. Jake, have you ever worked with kids?
Oh, yes.
Oh, you kind of have the same opinion that I have.
I love working with kids, and I've, you know, and you know that I teach, but the students I teach are primarily adults.
Well, yes, we are all adults.
Yeah.
I mean, all children, actors.
But I wanted to let Bobby off the griddle for a minute, asking him about, you know, creating an international incident between which children are better Korean or American kids and why he hasn't produced an offspring yet or an heir. But I wanted to ask you, I noticed in some of the things you write, you talk about being a performer and also being a creator. Mm-hmm. And as someone who spent my life doing this, I thought that was very interesting. Not a contradiction, but explain yourself, mister.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's nice that you bring that up, that you call that kind of a contradiction, because there are so many ways that we as performers are, you know, receiving information and, you know, there's a middleman to us, or we are the middleman sometimes to the audience and from the original creator. And it can be, you have a variety of experiences being that middleman, I think. And you can be like, sometimes I feel like the source material that I'm given is so good that I have so much pressure to tell this story or to give this person's ideas justice to the audience, and vice versa. Sometimes you can get some material that's like, yikes, like, how am I going to make this worthwhile for our audience to come out there? And so getting to do both of those things, I think, can be inspiring to us as performers to want to contribute to that and become a creator. And I was thrust into it in Korea in such a way that it was so fulfilling. And the stakes, like I was saying, the bar was relatively low for us, and the stakes were so low that we were able to kind of overcome those and meet those expectations and find the fun and the joy and the gratitude and the gratification in creating. And I think that that can sometimes, as performers and as, you know, vessels, be something that feels like, oh, I'm, you know, a roadblock. And giving yourself the opportunity to create, and regardless of what the outcome is and to whom you are presenting it in the end, even if it's just for yourself, you know, I would really encourage people to do that, because like you say, it sometimes can feel like a contradiction. It's like, I am a performer and I am meant to be doing somebody else's words or somebody else's songs or actions and things like that. That form of expression is, while it's amazing, it is limiting if it's not coming directly from yourself. And so the act of creating, regardless of where it ends up, is just another form of expression that you can find another level of fulfillment. And I feel really lucky to have gotten to do that. And, you know, I want to advocate for that as well, is that those two things can go hand in hand. You can create. I've, you know, almost everything I've created, I have also performed, you know, because we generally do shows for adults to perform to kids. And sometimes we make shows for kids to do for kids. And I've never done some of the work that I've created. But most of the time I have been, because we're self-producing or things like that, it's like, I am also performing it. And so that doesn't have to be that, but sometimes it can go hand in hand. And I think that creators should, you know, people who are strictly creators should challenge themselves to perform that if that is, you know, something that they want to be seen, and you can do that. And performers who don't fancy themselves creators should challenge themselves to create as well, because you will be able to find things in both that you wouldn't have known otherwise.
So this is a very important point, I think. It has been my experience as well. I think that a part of acting study in college should include creating. Mm-hmm. It gives you an awareness that actors who have not had that opportunity maybe come to later in their career or later in their life. There's an awareness that comes with creating the product, so to speak, mm-hmm. That takes you out of just yourself as a performer, that singular experience of figuring out who you are and who your character is and how you live in that character and so on. It's so important, and that's what caught my eye when I was reading some of your comments about that. And I think for most performers, they think of themselves as creators by being actors,
right, which
we are, mm-hmm. and they are. But I knew you meant more than that from your background. I think that's a great distinction.
Yeah, it's interesting because, like you say, the older you get and the more experience you have, the more different ways you can approach things, because you have been influenced by different people who have different backgrounds. And, you know, we're in the middle of Come From Away right now at Circa, which is a very collaborative kind of a show and requires focus. And our director, kind of halfway through our rehearsal process, said, I'm starting to see less of a stage full of actors and more of a stage full of directors. And when he said that, I was like, okay, is this going to be a good thing or a bad thing? Because sometimes, you know, you would believe that, like, these actors don't need to be directing each other up there or whatever. And he didn't mean that. He meant that as a compliment, because we were starting to see, like, how can I fit myself into this puzzle? And it had to be that, because it's not just like one person is up there doing this show and we're all behind them. We are all doing this at the same time at all times. And so to be on stage as a performer, thinking about it as a writer, thinking about it as a director, thinking about it as an audience member, you know, those things are going to help you and not hurt you, and especially in the theater. You know, I think that we always have to be aware of those things to some degree, and you have to be honestly interacting with your, you know, scene partner, but it can't just be here I am and here you are and we're locked eye to eye and here's a tear that the audience can't see, because they can't see it and it doesn't do you any good if your audience isn't receiving what you are trying to give. And so, like you say, to be able to think about the performance from every creative aspect is why they were written for your performance that way. That's only going to enhance your performance.
Oh, wow. That's deep and and very true. Come From Away is such a collaborative show. I was just blown away. Just blown away.
I'm convinced, though, that, Chris, a lot of people are unfamiliar with that show, are unfamiliar with that title.
Oh, maybe I should give a little background to let you give the background, because it's a script built from a book by the title of The Day the World... I think it was Came to Town.
Came to Town, yeah, right.
Mm-hmm. And it's this retelling, sort of during the 9/11 crisis in our country, we shut down our airspace, and 38 planes landed in Little Gander, Newfoundland, population about 10,000, right. And overnight they received 7,000 to 8,000 visitors, and the way they pulled together and were so welcoming, didn't consider it an inconvenience. They just stepped up. And it's inspiring. I wrote in my review that people would kind of expect something about 9/11 to be really depressing, and instead it's the exact opposite. And as we were talking about earlier, after reading the book, I was so excited to see how it would be adapted for the stage and which of those stories, because there were hundreds of them, would be denoted in the play. And I really think the authors, playwrights, which I was surprised they wrote everything about it, the music, the dialogue, the book, and what's the other element? Whatever. And I think they chose the perfect ones. It's just inspiring.
Yeah, I can't wait to read the book. I purposefully didn't read the book. And I have been recently doing a lot of shows based on true events or based on real people. And whether or not this is the right way to do it, I can't say, and I don't know. But for me, I purposefully have chosen not to stray beyond the constraints of the script of any of those shows or any of those characters that I've been portraying, because I want this story as written by those people to be what the audience is receiving. And if I have too much extra information, I'm going to be forcing things I feel like on them that isn't in the story and isn't in the play, and that these people chose to leave out for a reason. And so I very much look forward to reading the book after I'm finished playing this
You'll
part in this show.
You'll be able to read it if you have the time to sit down and just go. Mm-hmm. You can read it in one day.
That's what I've heard. And there are other people, and I'm not trying to say that the people who have done that research are incorrect, because there are plenty of people in the show that have done that and are giving compelling and layered and probably better, you know, informed portrayals than me in this show.
Not possible.
But that is, you know, obviously a worthwhile thing to do. And doing your research is obviously a part of performing. But yeah, I think, you know, like you were saying, the way that the show is constructed is so unique and is so perfect for a moment in time like that, where everyone can think back to exactly where they were and their initial reaction about what was going on that day. And you may have been the person that thought, like, my son lives in New York, and is he okay? You may have been the person who thought, there might be animals on those planes.
That was right? But
everybody can see it from their perspective and from 11 other perspectives, and then from 20 other perspectives, because the 12 of us play 14 characters each, right? And it's like, there is an avenue for everyone to connect to personally and an avenue for everyone to see a new perspective, at least a new perspective to latch onto. And so you can very easily personally latch onto one story, and then you get to see so many other stories. Mm-hmm. And like you say, there is heartbreak and there is solemnity inside of this, and it is very tastefully done.
Very.
While there, you also get to see the joy, and you get to see the confusion that leads to new connection and things like that. And there is plenty of light and uplifting moments inside the show as well.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Let me get to a nuts and bolts thing that I'm curious about, and I'm jumping away from what we're talking about now, but I kind of wanted to, because you have been in a lot of shows at Circa 21, some back to back. And the challenge of doing back to back different shows, and I'm coming, and where I'm coming from is I'm 75 years old and memorizing is not my strength anymore. Well, actually, I can memorize it. It's just I can't remember it when I get on stage. But, How does that work? You're doing a show. You've got dialogue, et cetera, and whatever to do for the show you're in, and then to try to get ready for the next show. Do you have some kind of trick for that?
I don't know. There, you know, fortunately for us, when we are working at Circa, you know, generally you have the experience of, because we do 2 weeks of rehearsal. And if you are not in a show at the same time, you're there for like 8 hours a day sometimes. It's our full-time job is to be learning the next show. And so you have experience putting something together in a fast amount of time. And you understand that with that comes a lot of your own homework time that it takes. And so the first time anybody does a crossover is what we call is where you're doing a show and rehearsing a show at the same time. It is a difficult experience and can make you crazy. And you have to balance the brain and the body as much as anything else. And so I don't know if I have any specific tricks. I just know what it takes to do one and I know what it takes to do the other. And then putting them at the same time, I just have to find the balance. Because I have to know what it takes for me to get ready to do the show that I already know. And I have to know what it takes for me to learn a show that I don't already know. And I have to find the way that I can balance those two things. And while that means sometimes getting up and doing a show in the morning, going to rehearsal for the next show in between, and then doing a show at night, you know, those Wednesdays can be tough. But I know that this is what I have to do to make this performance happen. And this is what I have to do to show the next production that I am getting ready. And they always have grace for us. And, you know, if I was to go and do two Come From Aways today and have to go to rehearsal in between, which I will have to do in a month or so for White Christmas, but they will know that I'm probably not going to be giving 100% of my vocal strength at that rehearsal in between. Or I'm not going to be...
Because you need it for the two shows.
Right, exactly. And we know that, like, that is our real job at the moment is to perform. And Circa understands that we are... preparing a show and doing a show is that the show that's being done is the one that has to take precedent because that is what the people are paying to see at the moment. And so
I just gained a whole lot more admiration for you.
Well, there are a lot of people that do it and there are a lot of people who are going to be doing it and have just done it and will be doing it for White Christmas. And it's worth it to keep the people around for multiple shows who, you know, are talented and deserve that chance. And
you certainly are that.
Well, that's very nice. Thank you.
I should mention that today is a Wednesday, and this is a busy day for you. It's, what is it, September 24th today? So just to give people reference when they're listening that what time of the year we're... So you're going to be in White Christmas, too.
That's right. We just did White Christmas just a few years ago, and I'll be playing the same role of Phil Davis in White Christmas here. It's... such a fun show. I would do it every year if, you know, if they let us. And I think the audiences love it, too. And so I'm very excited.
How do you approach a role that is so well known? Because I, for one, and I'm sure I'm not the only person in the country, I watch the Christmas movies every year, White Christmas being one of them. How does it feel to try to play a role that is so well known and so ingrained in people's memories?
Right. It's interesting, especially with a show like White Christmas, which is so close to being like the movie, but very different in many ways from being like the movie. And I think that is the saving grace for us, is that I don't feel like I have to literally go be Danny Kaye every day. Like, I can just do this version of this story, you know, and it's one of the unique things about theater and versus film is that the story of White Christmas has been told thousands and thousands of times by thousands and millions of different people because that's the way theater goes, is that it's not just done one time and those are the one people that you think of when you do this. And so therein, you know, lies the challenge of something that is both, is that this is obviously the apex of this story, is what everybody has in their mind for the movie. And yet we also can feel free to know that it's not exactly the same and they don't expect us to do exactly the same. The lines aren't the same. There are even some different songs from the movie version to the stage version that I get free. I have the freedom to be a creator in this and have my own spin on this. And it's at once a responsibility and to know that, like, there are expectations for this character, and also an opportunity, I think, to get to try your best to give your spin on that, which is what most theater actors want to do to begin with, I think, is to put themselves into any role that they are given. And so it is a fun challenge and something that I think, and you know, even now I will have played this same role myself twice, and I've done that a couple times, and I hope to not just recreate that performance. You know, I want to improve upon what I have done and do my best to improve upon what everyone's expectations are for this character or for this story.
I mentioned that you're in a lot of Circa 21, and one of the things that came to mind is that between you and Tristan Tapscott, you're almost like the king's men of Shakespeare.
Yeah.
Which is fun because I'm such a big fan because I've seen you in such diverse roles, and your talent is amazing to change characters like that.
Well, Tristan is a great example, especially in that regard, and he's a dear friend and has been here for so long, and, you know, people like Tristan and the Wall Jaspers and, like, Kim Furness Vandergenst, they're all in Come From Away right now, and they've all just been such stalwarts of the, you know, Quad City community, theater community, and have really paved the way for those of us who have come in. And so many of us, of, you know, people have come to this community and stayed because of the groundwork that people like that have laid for us. And, you know, Come From Away is a good, you know, is a good example of getting to see a lot of different people play a lot of different parts. And that, you know, it is a unique skill set that, you know, takes a lot of concentration and focus and preparation, but it is something that hopefully we are all, you know, learning from each other. And it's a good opportunity to get to do that, especially when you work with people over and over again.
I want to thank you for clearing something up for me. Seeing Kim on stage, it was like, I know her. I'm looking in the program. I interviewed her for the paper several years ago when she was a bootlegger.
Oh.
And so Furness wasn't in the program. Right. It's like, where have I seen her before? Yeah. Oh, my gosh. She was great. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And she was great as a bootlegger, too, and a wonderful interview. Jumping back to the creative side, do you have a musical spinning around inside that you want to write someday?
Oh, always. And it's I've got notes app. My notes app on my phone is just full of ideas, you know, or like my recording app, you know, just walking down the street, just like, just you humming a melody because like this is there's something there I can figure this out, you know, like, or I have a conversation with somebody and it's like something funny happens and I'm just like, write that down because you can put that into a script. There's always something in there, and there's always the script that you didn't get to write. And
have you started one?
Yes, actually, Ashley, my wife, is the artistic director at Davenport Junior Theater right now and has been for a couple years, and we have found a lot of value in that organization and are very thankful to have that organization in this community. And we are writing a script for them to produce this season. And so we are in the middle of writing a fun fairy tale mystery for them about stole the Princess and the Pea's pea. And so mind your P's and clues.
Ah.
Coming soon to Davenport Junior Theater.
Oh, my little Cora will love that.
Yeah.
I have a question.
Okay.
And I made a note of it, so I'm going to look at it right now. Something else that you... I'm throwing your own words at you. So Bobby online, as part of his online resume and so forth, he has said, I've been performing on and off stage for 25 years, probably longer now because you probably wrote this a while ago, professionally for the last 10, and I'm assuming that's longer too. But it's the next part. Performing has taken me across the world, and I look forward to where it will take me next. So where next? Not necessarily geographically.
Right.
Just where next?
Yeah. That, I think, that's, you know, it's nice that you kind of see the both sides of that. It's an interesting thing to think about because Ashley and I think, we're fortunate to get to meet literally in, you know, one of those traveled places, somewhere that was like physically far away from where either of us, I'm sure, ever expected to be. And since then, we have, you know, continually kind of adjusted our collective journey path, you know, like within this business and within this lifestyle. And so I think everybody, when you're young and you're, you know, actually telling yourself, I'm going to make the decision to be a musical theater stage performer for my career, you all think like there's a ladder to climb and it is linear and it is straight and it is from where I am right now to Broadway. And that's just not the case. And so the being open to the turns and the winding road I never would have been in Korea if I, you know, I never would have met my wife. I never would have learned that I, you know, could write a musical. You know, there's so many things. I wouldn't be here right now, 100%, if I had stayed on the traditional ladder and I've just had my blinders on and thought, this is the direction I'm going. And so, again, long story short, it's a hard question to answer, and I am sort of glad that I don't know where next is, quote unquote next, because I have always been able to find something I love in everywhere and everything and with everyone that I am and am doing. And so for right now, it's here, and we have been given so much by this community and by the artists and consumers of the arts in this community that we feel like it is our turn to invest and reinvest. And I think we have been able to do that to some degree, but I don't think that we're finished doing that here yet. And so I don't know that we're going to be here, you know, for forever, because like I say, you never know. But for now, what's next for us is to continue to try to give the communities that we have been welcomed into as much as we can. And that, you know, Davenport Junior Theater, where Ashley is, we're both working on Honk for them right now, which is such a fun, you know, kid show that I hope everybody comes and sees. And we work with North Scott High School for their musicals. And we have helped, you know, I hope to advance their program in that community. And we're here at Circa as often as we can be. And, you know, little things here and there, we meet people working at any one of those places that can bring us to other places. And we have gotten the opportunity to work with other community theaters like up at Countryside and Music Guild and things like that. And there's so much, and it seems like the community is so invested in that for now, that's our hope, is just to continue to invest here and to be able to weather whatever this storm is, because there's so many theaters all over the place right now that are struggling so hard. And we're so fortunate in our community to have all of these community theaters and the professional theater here for us that can, that have all survived from 2020 on, that, you know, big turning point. And it's so important for us to keep those things alive, and whatever that takes and whatever that means for 2025 and beyond.
Something I want to explore after looking at your website. Mm-hmm. Being an actor requires a lot of travel often. And I noticed that you and Ashley, I can't remember the term you used for it, but you try to get jobs out of town together.
Mm-hmm.
When you can't get that, let's talk about, can you share with us how you handle the family aspect of being apart?
Right. Last year was a really good example of that. We have prioritized working together as much as possible. And we've been so fortunate, like unbelievably fortunate, to have gotten to do that. And the way that those things have worked out for us. And for one, it's because we make it a priority, but also just the way that we've gotten to work together from when we got back from Korea till now is unbelievable. And if you ask other people in the biz, every time we tell them, they are always amazed at how often we've gotten to do it. And one is because we're intentional about it. We prioritize it.
Which, but I must say, is very admirable on both your parts.
Yeah, I think so. And two is because I think that we both do quality work. And when we work somewhere together, they're like, great, we'll have them back again, again, again. And, you know, like, there are a lot of, you know, nuts and bolts, things like you were saying. Like, if we're working out of town together, they know they've got roommates. They don't have to worry about, you know, because out of town people, they have to house them when they work at different theaters and stuff like that. And so if they can throw the married couple in together, it's one less hazard or, you know, for them to deal with housing wise. And so that's just one little thing, but that is something that we have going for us. And so when we work apart, it's, again, and it's just something I've always said to people, and I completely respect and understand the people who are in this business and say, I could never be with somebody who is also in this business. For me, and I think for Ashley, I could never be with somebody who is not in this business. It's just, we understand what it takes. And I know that when I leave to go and do a contract, that she knows what my schedule is going to be like. And she understands that there may be a whole day where we don't get to talk. But she has been through it herself. She has personal experience. It's not just that she is hoping to understand. She really does understand what it takes to do this. And vice versa, when she goes away, I understand what that means. And we are both so invested in this, in our profession. It is so personal that also we then get, when we get to debrief, we get to hear exciting things about the other person's day. It's not just like, I went out of town and you are here, you know, doing the same thing every day, or like vice versa. And so we get to hear about how the process is going for each other and things like that. And we can personally relate to those experiences. And while obviously the distance is, you know, not ideal, it can help you to, you know, just have new things to talk about. Because it's not like we're both doing the same thing, which is also, you know, a positive for us. But when we have new, you know, and interesting and exciting things to talk about and new people to meet, so that we can hopefully bring them into our theater family, we understand that it's an opportunity for both of us. And that, you know, I never would have worked here at Circa had it not been for Ashley. I'm able to ride her coattails all the time. And I've worked places there where she has been able to come along after the fact. And so we know that we are a team, I guess, is the short answer for this. And I keep saying that, and I'm sorry that I'm just talking all the time.
I know, but it's so hard to get actors to talk about themselves. I know,
but, you know, being a team is, you know, can mean a lot of different things. And when we are here together, it's an easy way to be a team. And when we're apart, there are some ways that it's harder, but there are some ways that we can find the advantages in that and understand that, like, we can continue to advocate for each other and can continue to grow our spheres and make our little team stronger.
When Brett Hitchcock was on the podcast, we talked a little about the issue of housing, because I wasn't aware of what that aspect of regional theater involved. Because apparently Ashley is a Quad City native, is that correct?
Yes.
So you have more of a permanent base. Brett also said that an increasing number of actors are choosing to base themselves in the Midwest because it's cheaper and they travel all the time anyway, blah, blah, blah. Are you finding that to be true as well?
Yes, I think for many reasons. I think that, like you say, that the actor market is just oversaturated. I mean, it's just getting more and more people cramming into it every day and every year. And, you know, and so if you are trying to climb the ladder in New York, there's, you know, there's a lot of rungs and there's a lot of people you got to shuffle past to get up that ladder. And so if you can adjust your priorities or you can adjust your, you know, goals or something like that, then, like, you can find a lot of steady work. And as you've mentioned many times, I have gotten a lot of steady work here at Circa because I have settled down here, quote unquote, settled down. I have moved here because Circa is doing quality productions and has a quality audience base. And there's so much extra theater here that I don't have to be a bartender or a server or work in an office to be able to supplement my career. I can continue to work at junior theater and work at the high school and work with community theaters and work at the college to supplement my acting ambition. And so I think a lot of people are doing that because, you know, like you say, it's cheaper to have a house here or an apartment than it is to be in New York, and you get much more space and, you know, you can have your car and stuff like that. And so that is certainly one reason. But I think also another reason is because people are seeing so many regional theaters close, you know, because it's hard to operate and it's hard to upkeep. And people understand that, like, if we want to keep getting jobs and we want to keep traveling and we want to keep getting to work in this business and have this business even be a business, we're going to have to do our part too. And sometimes that means investing in a place and in a community and in a specific theater. And that doesn't necessarily mean you have to sacrifice ambition or anything like that. We're getting so much more opportunity to work and to personally interact and connect to a community and a group of people by doing that.
Well, I want to compliment you and all your other musical performers, and Jake, you will be interested to hear this.
Okay.
Hicks is finally beginning to like musicals.
Oh. We better note this day and time on the calendar because
I know. And Come From Away is one of the big influencers. For years, I couldn't get him to go to a musical. But since I've started reviewing for the radio station here, we're going to a lot more, and he's actually beginning to like musicals. Talking about traveling, on your resume here, I'm just curious where some of these theaters are so I can travel to see other productions. Where is Cortland Repertory?
That's upstate New York.
Well, I won't get there. I'm assuming New York also for Little Theater on the Square?
The Little Theater on the Square is very close. The Little Theater on the Square is just like 3 hours southeast of here in Sullivan, Illinois.
Oh, okay.
And we've had several people from Circa go back and forth there. I've worked there several times, and they're great people.
Summertide.
Summertide was the Alabama one down in Gulf Shores, Alabama.
Awesome. Dutch Apple.
Dutch Apple Dinner Theater is in Lancaster, Pennsylvania. And so that is... Yeah, straight across. And the Broadway Palm you may see on there too. They're run by the same company. That's down in Fort Myers, Florida.
Ah, okay. Have you worked in Arizona?
No, so many people have worked in Arizona, and especially in, like, because those two theaters, the one in Pennsylvania and the one in Florida, used to have a theater in Arizona that has changed hands several times since then, but they stopped going to that theater when I started working with that company. And
it wasn't related to that, by the
way. No, yeah, it wasn't my fault. Yeah. Right. But yeah, there's such a pipeline over to Arizona, and this is the furthest west I've ever worked, is here in the Quad Cities.
I ask because my brother and sister-in-law live in Scottsdale,
yeah,
and they're going to come from away in February, and that's when we're going out. We're not going to my husband and I are not going there, but they're looking for it. I was so happy to say you're going to love this show so much. Yeah.
Well, to them and all of your other Arizona listeners, please hire me in Arizona. I want to work there.
I'll pass your resume
thank
along.
You. Good, thank you.
Bucket list role.
I've been so fortunate to get to play so many bucket list roles at Circa recently. I've never really been the kind of person who has dream roles, you know, and I always say that I feel like my sweet spot is the like third to last bow. That's what I like to have. I don't like to be like the main guy, or like, I like to be Lumiere and I like to be Bob Gaudio. And you know, those have been really, really excellent.
Jersey Boys was so good.
Yeah, I love that show. I was got so lucky to get to that as often as I did, especially at my age. But my dream role is inside of my favorite show, and it's not done very frequently, especially because it's so enormous, especially at this level. But it's coming back to Broadway, and it's called Ragtime. And I played Father in Ragtime my senior year of high school for my last show in high school. And that, again, is, you know, not necessarily the role that you would expect people to want from that show. It's not the biggest, flashiest, most applause kind of a thing, but it is very meaningful to me. And that show and that role is the bucket list show and role for me.
That is a magnificent show.
Yeah.
And it had disappeared for quite some time. Yeah. And it's interesting you mention it, because I was just telling a close friend in the theater here that he was saying, you know, what show would you like to see? That was the show.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Are you approaching Music Guild about it?
I'm not sure that is the kind of show they would do.
I'm not familiar with it, so.
Well, it's a large show for one thing. And it's, I'm not sure their audience base would be the audience for the show, but it's an absolutely magnificent show, not done often enough, and I'm also very happy it's coming
then
back.
Then I hope we get it.
Yeah, and like you say, it's difficult to produce. It's so specific, it's so enormous, and it is very ethnically and racially specific throughout.
So we have to be careful.
It takes a certain kind of community to be able to pull it off, but like you say, you could get so much of the heart of the show and the strength of the show from listening to the cast recording, and I would recommend it to anybody. And if you can get to New York to see it when it's there, we saw it at the Encores last year, and most of that cast is coming back when they open it at Lincoln Center, and it is so worth it. I don't care how much it costs, it is so worth it.
I don't know if you and I should take offense when he was talking about his age.
I'm beyond offense about age.
Right. And me too. And I'm proud of being my age and getting to play the parts that I play, but I was 15 years too old to play Bob Gaudio.
Really?
Well, yeah, he's supposed to be the youngest of the group. And you know, that's one of those shows that's out of time,
but,
really.
But I don't think most of the audience would know that he was the youngest of the group. So
lucky for me.
And the show covers a span of years.
Right,
so.
Exactly. And that's what I told myself to.
Well, I think we could probably chat with you for another 2 hours.
just been so interesting. I want to thank you for agreeing to come on the podcast.
Oh, thank you for having me. This is, I don't get to do this very often. And like I say, I'm sorry that I just like monopolized all your time.
Oh, no, no, no. That's why you're here.
More about your stories.
That's why you're here. And Jake, thank you for coming on and being co-host.
Absolutely. It was wonderful for me in particular this time, as I say, because I've been a fan of Bobby's for a while now and never have had the opportunity to sit down and actually meet him. So.
And so I want to thank our listeners. Again, Jake Ladd was our co-host. Our guest was Bobby Becker. And I'm Chris Hicks.
Break a leg.
Thanks for listening to Footlights, a community theater podcast from the Quad Cities. Footlights is a production of WVIK, Quad Cities NPR. If you'd like to explore more podcasts from WVIK or support our work, you can do that at WVIK.org or by downloading the WVIK app.